My lifelong involvement with Mrs. Dempster began at 5:58 o'clock p.m. on the 27th of December, 1908, at which time I was 10 years and 7 months old. I'm able to date the occasion with complete certainty, because that afternoon I'd been sledding with my lifelong friend and enemy, Percy Boyd Staunton, and we'd quarreled because his fine new Christmas sled would not go as fast as my old one.
Steel runners are better than wood any old day. Do you know how much that cost?
My dad says you can't judge a book by its cover.
Your dad? You think your dad knows everything just because he writes for the paper?
My father's the editor of the Banner.
Yeah, well, my father's a doctor, and that's better than an editor any old day. Doctors make tons more money than editors.
All right, then. I'm going home. 5:57. Supper will be ready.
You're always showing off your father's old watch. Mine's better than that.
Yeah, yours is so good your mom won't let you take it out of the house. I'm going now.
What's the matter? Your mother give you a licking if you're late for supper? Mommy's boy, mommy's boy. Dunny's a mommy's boy.
Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never hurt me.
Yeah, well, then how about this?
You dare hit me with that snowball and you'll be in real trouble.
Why? You gonna beat me up? You gotta run home and tell your mommy.
Ha, you missed. You couldn't hit the broadside of a barn anyhow.
The old thing hit your big ass because it's broader than a barn.
You better not throw that. And you better watch your language because that's Reverend Dempster up ahead.
The Reverend Amasa Dempster and his wife always took a walk at this time after dark when most people were at supper, because Mrs. Dempster was going to have a baby, and it was not the custom in our village for pregnant women to show themselves boldly in the streets. I was sure that Percy would try to land one last insulting snowball on me before I ducked into our house. So to prevent that, I stepped briskly in front of the Dempster.
Hello, Reverend Dempster. Mrs. Dempster.
Good evening, Dunstable.
Why, hello, Dunny. Did you have an ice cream?
Mary, what's the matter?
Oh, something hit me.
Oh, careful, you're making me slip. Look out! Are you all right? Are you hurt?
Oh. Take me home, Amasa. Take me home right away.
Can you get up? Mary, please try to help. Can you move? Shh, my dear. Shh. The whole street will hear. Dunstable, lend us your sled to get my wife home.
Yes, sure, Reverend.
Pull the sled over here while I lift her. Easy now, easy. You're all right, Mary.
Dunstable Ramsay, your supper's been getting cold these 10 minutes now. Where have you been?
I couldn't help it, Mother. I had to help Reverend Dempster take Mrs. Dempster home.
Mrs. Dempster? What happened?
She got hit by a snowball or something, and she fell real hard on the ice.
In her condition? Is she hurt badly?
She couldn't walk. She kept holding her stomach.
Did he call the doctor?
No, he just took her home.
Oh, dear Lord. It probably won't occur to that man. He'll be standing there praying over her, more likely than not. Oh, I'd better just step over there and see if there's anything I can do. The Dunstable, don't you dare sit down at that table before you've scrubbed those hands. George, see that the boys are in bed by 8:30 if I'm not back by then.
The clock downstairs struck 9:30 before I heard my mother return. There was a stovepipe in our house that came from the living room into the upstairs hall, and it was a fine conductor of sound. I crept into the hall. My older brother Willie slept like a bear, and put my ear as near to the pipe as the heat would allow.
A few things. I'll probably be all night. Get me all the baby blankets out of the trunk, and then go right down to Ruckles and make him get you a big roll of cotton wool from the store, the finest he has, and bring it to the Dempster's. The doctor says if it isn't a big roll, to get two.
You don't mean it's coming now?
Yes, well, don't wait up for me.
It was 4 in the morning when she returned.
While the doctor and I were busy with the baby, he knelt beside his wife's bed and prayed out loud that if God must take the soul of Mary Dempster to him, to do so with gentleness and mercy, and that the soul of little Paul, that's how he baptized the child, was safe and pure and ready to travel to heaven with his mother. It was all I could do to hold my tongue. Dr. McCausland finally had to read the riot act to him and put him out of the room. Imagine carrying on like that, right over the poor girl's bed while she's fighting for her life.
Oh, God. God.
Yeah, my pa says McCausland really had his hands full with that one.
Yeah. The baby came too soon.
Did it?
And you know why.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. You threw that snowball.
I threw a snowball at you, and I guess it gave you a good smack, too.
Do you mean to say that's what you think?
You bet it's what I think. And it's what you better think, too, if you know what's good for you.
Little Paul will pull through. He'll be slow, the doctor says, but he'll be all right.
You must be pleased. It's mostly your doing.
Oh, no, I only did what I could. But the doctor says he hopes somebody will keep an eye on Paul. His mother certainly can't.
She isn't coming round?
It doesn't appear so. That was a terrible shock for the poor little thing. And Amasa Dempster just won't believe that there's a time to talk about God and a time to trust God and keep your mouth shut. Luckily, she doesn't seem to understand a lot of what he says.
Do you mean she's gone simple?
She's as quiet and friendly and sweet-natured as she ever was, poor little soul, but she just isn't all there. That snowball certainly did a terrible thing to her. Who do you suppose threw it?
Dempster couldn't see. I don't suppose anybody will ever know.
I've wondered more than once if Dunstable knows more about that than he's letting on.
Oh, no, he knows how serious it is. If he knew anything, he'd have spoken up by now.
Well, whoever it was, the devil guided his hand.
Yes, and the devil had shifted his mark. Mrs. Dempster had gone simple. I crept to bed, wondering if I would live through the night. And at the same time, desperately afraid to die.
She's no different from what she was before, really, except now she's more so.
Was never meant to be a preacher's wife, I'm afraid.
Oh, well, thank the good Lord, she seems to be perfectly able-bodied again anyway. Though I must say, she shows no sign of getting down to work. Why, just this morning I saw the Reverend himself drawing water from the well to do the washing.
Oh, instead of getting down to the Lord's work and earning his $550 per annum. Sad, sad.
Well, she's doing the cooking again anyway.
Cooking? I call it burning. But she never seems to notice, just laughs about it.
Always laughing. When nobody else can see anything to laugh about.
Laughs and plays with the baby as if it was the doll.
She's feeding the baby herself now, you know.
Don't I know it indeed? Dropped in the other day to take her a few things, you know. And there she was, with everything showing, even though her husband was in the room. I didn't know where to hide my face.
Dunstable.
Yes, Mother.
Have you finished your homework?
Just about done.
Well, you can finish it later. I want you to take this loaf of bread over to the Dempsters while it's still hot. And chop some more wood while you're there.
Yes, Mother.
And if you see any chalk marks on their veranda, rub them out.
Chalk marks?
They're put there by tramps, you see, as signals to one another to show the house is good for a generous handout. The poor woman has never understood thrift.
I saw Mrs. Dempster every day. When spring arrived, I cut the grass and weeded the vegetable patch and generally made myself handy at her house and watched, as I was charged, to keep her from doing foolish things.
Why, Danny, how kind of you to come and see us.
I felt myself tied to her by the certainty that I was responsible for her straying wits, the disorder of her marriage, and the frail body of the child who was her great delight in life. I had made her what she was, and in such circumstances, I must hate her or love her. In a manner that was far too demanding for my age or experience, I began to love her.
Come see us again real soon.
Hey, Dunny, come and play some ball?
I can't, Percy. I've got some work to do.
Oh, sure. Gotta go right over to the bug house and cut the grass.
The bug house?
The Dempster's. That's the bug house now where the crazy lady lives.
She's not crazy, and don't you say that.
Why not? Everyone knows it's true.
You're crazy yourself.
Everyone knows it but you. Bye, Donnie. Come see us again real soon.
You stop that.
You know anyone calls you behind your back? Nursey. Nursey Dunny, looking after the crazy lady.
You stop that, or I'll...
What do you do?
I'll tell everyone what your mother calls you. That she calls you Pidgey Boy Boy.
At 13, I should have been learning the printing business. My father was neat-handed and swift, and Willie was following in his steps. But I was all thumbs and really not much good at anything in the shop. So to keep me from under his feet, my father found me a position as part-time under-librarian at the Deptford Library. I was appointed to this job at a salary of nothing at all, the honor being deemed sufficient reward. 3 afternoons a week, I opened our one-room library in the upstairs of the town hall and lorded it over any school children who appeared. Once I had the dizzy pleasure of assisting Leona Cruikshank, a classmate of mine, who had corkscrew curls and a great way of never meeting your eyes.
I have to write an essay about the equator, so I want to find out whether it goes over the top or around the middle. And I don't know where to find that.
I guess we should look in the encyclopedia, under E.
Oh, you're so smart, Dunny. You're the smartest boy in the class.
More afternoons than not, however, nobody appeared and I had the library to myself. I could browse to my heart's content through a locked closet in which our library kept its more unusual books. There was a periodical with a frightful engraving of a fallen womb and a portrait of a man with lavish hair and whiskers but no nose, which made me a lifelong enemy of syphilis. But my special treasures were The Secrets of Stage Conjuring by Robert Houdin and Modern Magic by Professor Hoffman.
By diligent study and application, the reader may become a conjurer of great skill, astonish his friends, win breathless admiration.
Oh, you're so smart, Dunny.
And become a great power. Golly.
It was like me to begin with eggs, or to be precise, one egg. It never occurred to me that a clay egg of the kind used to deceive hens would do just as well.
I put the egg into my right ear like this, and I take it into my left ear like this. I put the egg into my mouth. Aha! Where did it go? Perhaps I should look in my pocket. Oh, golly.
Dunstable, what are you doing there?
Oh, Mother, I thought you were out.
Why are you washing your trousers?
Oh, I sat on something.
Well, that's egg on that pocket. Someone stole an egg from my kitchen this morning. Was it you?
Stole?
Don't lie to me. I counted them.
You count the eggs?
And don't be cheeky to me. Of course I count the eggs. Why did you take the egg? Dunstable, I insist that you answer me.
I was practicing prestidigitation.
You were what?
I was practicing...
Don't say that word to me again. Do you think I'm made of eggs?
Well, that's something you'll have to decide for yourself.
How dare you speak that way to your mother? If you think you're too old to be beaten, I'll show you you're mistaken. Where's that pony whip? Ah, oh, there. Now then, what do you say to that?
Mother, don't be silly. That's just a toy whip from the fair.
Oh, silly am I? We'll see how silly you think this is.
Don't you dare touch me.
Don't touch you indeed. I'll teach you how to speak to your mother. I'll teach you some respect. I'll teach you not to be so impudent, so arrogant. Oh, Dunstable, you have hurt your mother terribly. I'll not speak to you until you apologize.
Dunstable?
Yes, Father?
I persuaded your mother to come down, if you will apologize. Will you do that?
Yes.
You can come down, my dear. On your knees, lad. Now repeat after me. I will always love my mother.
I will always love my mother.
To whom I owe the great gift of life.
To whom I owe the great gift of life.
I beg her.
I beg her.
As I do God.
As I do God.
To forgive me.
To forgive me.
Knowing full well that I am truly unworthy.
Knowing full well that I am truly unworthy.
Oh, I know I'll never have another anxious moment with my own dear laddie.
Instead of sickening me of magic, this incident increased my appetite for it. It was necessary for me to gain power in some realm into which my parents, my mother particularly, could not follow me. So I drudged away secretly at card and coin tricks. I needed an audience to judge how well I was doing, and I found one readily in Paul Dempster. He was 4 and I was 14, so on the pretext of looking after him for an hour or two, I would take him to the library and entertain him with my tricks.
All right, I'm ready. Now pick a card.
Which one?
Anyone you want.
This one?
Anyone you want.
This one?
Yes, that one. No, don't show it to me. Now remember which one you picked. Do you remember?
Yes.
Then put it back in the deck. That's right. Now, I haven't seen the card, have I?
No.
So now I will shuffle the deck. Oops, I better shuffle those again. Now I spread the cards out, and... Aha! The 9 of clubs! Is that your card?
I don't know.
Oh, it is, Paul. It is. That's the card you chose. See, I fooled you.
Can I shuffle?
All right. Be careful now. You hold half the deck in each hand like this. Then you bend the cards back a little like this.
Like this?
Yes, like that. Tomorrow I'll show you some coin tricks.
Can I have my story now?
All right. This one's from the Child's Book of Saints. And it's all about a man called St. Francis.
Dunstable.
Yes, Reverend Dempster?
Come into my study. I want a word with you. Kneel with me. Heavenly Father, in the difficult task that I'm about to perform, I seek your help. Help me to be just, but not uncharitable. Let God's love cleanse the impurities from a sinful mind. Amen.
Amen.
Dunstable. This morning there were 3 cents change from the baker's visit. My son picked them up from the table and caused them to vanish.
You mean he stole them?
Don't pretend to misunderstand. You've been teaching him deception. You've been teaching him trickery and cheating.
Oh, no, sir. It's not cheating. It's sleight of hand. It's skill.
And is it skill you've been teaching when you put playing cards the devil's picture book into the hands of an innocent child? And worse, you've been teaching the boy to cheat with the cards, to handle them like a smoking car gambler. And worse yet, you've been corrupting his mind with stories about saints.
But they're just stories, sir. In a book.
If you don't know that the veneration of saints is one of the vilest superstitions of the Scarlet Woman of Rome, then I'm going to have a word with your minister to make sure you find out. Paul confessed blasphemies about somebody who spent his life praying on a pillar 40 feet high, about St. Francis who saw a living Christ on a crucifix, and St. Mary of the angels, and more of such devil's slime. My blood froze to hear it.
But that's not what those stories are like.
Blasphemy and corruption! And I can see that it must be beaten out of you as it was with Paul. Will you take your punishment from me? Or would you prefer that I tell your parents and leave it to them to do their duty?
I guess you better tell my parents. And you could tell Reverend Boyer, too. See if they listen to you.
Very well. You leave me no alternative. I must ask you to never set foot in my house again, nor to speak to any of my family. Do not dare to ever come near my son again. I will pray for you.
He said nothing to my parents, nor yet to Mr. Boyer. I interpreted his silence as weakness, and probably that was an important element in it. I saw him after that a few times each week at a distance, and it seemed to me that the burdens of his life were bearing him down. He didn't stoop, but he looked gaunter and crazier. Paul I saw only once, and he turned away from me and ran towards his home, crying. I was terribly sorry for him. But Mrs. Dempster I saw often over the next 2 years, for she sometimes spent a whole morning wandering from house to house.
Good morning, Mrs. Ramsey. I just thought I'd stop in and bring you some rhubarb for my garden.
That's very kind of you.
Oh, there's more than I'll ever be able to use. And goodness knows, I hate to see it go to waste. Oh,
that's very good of you. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Why, hello, Dunny.
Hello, Mrs. Dempster.
Goodness, look, it's you. Dunstable Ramsey, you've almost grown to be a man. Why don't you come to see us anymore? Paul misses you, he tells me so.
But I...
Well, I must be going. I want to deliver this lettuce to Mrs. Duncan before it wilts. Come see us real soon, Dunny.
That's the second time she's been here this morning with rhubarb. And look at it. Only fit to be thrown out. Poor soul. She dearly loves to give. The pity is that more people with more to give don't feel the same way.
Mrs. Dempster's wandering came to an end on Friday, the 24th of October, 1913. It was almost 10 o'clock at night, and I was reading by the stove, as was my father. My mother was sewing something for the Mission Circle Bazaar, and Willie was out at band practice. Jim Warren, our part-time village policeman, was at the door.
Mary Dempster's disappeared. Jim's organizing a hunt.
Yeah, been gone since after supper. Reverend come home at 9 and she was gone. Nowhere's around the town and now we're going to search the pit. If she's not there, we'll have to drag the river.
You'd better go with your father, Dunstable. I'll get right over to Dempster's and keep an eye on Paul and be ready when you bring her home.
Get the big flashlight from my toolkit, Dunstable.
We made for the pit, where a group of men were already assembled.
All right, now there's 15 of us. So what we'll do is we'll scramble down into the pit and form a line, leaving maybe 15 or 30 feet between each man, and we just cut right through to the other side.
Right.
Anybody sees anything, shouts. All right, then. Let's not waste any time.
My father was 30 feet on my left and Jim Warren on my right as I walked through the pit. In spite of the nearness of the men, it was lonely work, and though there was a moon, it was waning and the light was poor. I was afraid and didn't know what I feared, which is the worst kind of fear. We might have gone a quarter of a mile when I came to a clump of sallow. I was about to skirt it when I heard a stirring inside it.
Here! Over here!
My father was beside me in an instant. He shot the beam of his flashlight into the scrub, and in that bleak, flat light,
over here,
we saw a tramp and a woman in the act of copulation. The tramp rolled over and gaped in terror. The woman looked up at me. Mrs. Dempster.
All right, mister. Put your hands up. You hear me? I'm warning you. Put your hands up.
You'll have to speak very loudly to him, Mr. Warren. He's hard of hearing.
Mary, fix your skirt.
Massa.
Let me help you up.
Thank you, Massa.
Mary, what made you do it?
He was very civil. And he wanted it so badly.
The town of Deptford buzzed and hummed all day Saturday. But the real trial would come on Sunday, and everybody knew it. At church on Sunday, everybody was aching to know what would happen at the Baptist service. At the Presbyterian Church, the Reverend Andrew Boyer prayed,
"For all who are distressed in spirit, and especially for a family known to us all who are in sore travail."
And something of a similar intention was said in the Anglican and Methodist churches. Father Regan at the Catholic Church came out flat-footed.
"The gravel pit is a disgrace, and it is unthinkable that the railway does not clean it up or close it up."
We soon knew what the Baptist parson said that morning. He went into his pulpit, prayed silently for a short time, and then...
"There will be no sermon this morning. The time has come for me to resign my charge, as I have other duties that are incapable of being combined with it. I ask you all for your prayers."